Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren, and Mr. Dave Baseballs Martino is here. I think that's, we're just going to call you Baseballs.
Baseballs?
Yeah. Hey, yeah. Balls. Well, whenever people think of Dave, they think of balls.
Yeah.
Bouncing from the left to the right.
To the right.
You know. So bouncing tonight. Anyway.
AC/DC.
Yeah. Well, for the kids. Man. For the kiddies out there. AC/DC was a band last century.
Yeah. Right.
I think most of them are dead, too, now, aren't they?
Yeah.
Oh, isn't that terrible?
Oh, no. There's only, well, I don't know. Maybe there's a couple. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I think both singers.
Oh, yeah, well, this is, the original singer, yeah.
And the guitarist, too, isn't he?
Yep, yep.
Oh, well, then, you know, it's not a whole lot left, is there?
Yeah, no.
So they can use a drum machine. Speaking of that, Tom Sizemore, hey, I really liked him.
Yeah. Yeah, he was in Relic.
Okay.
He was playing Lincoln Child's.
Yeah, I liked him. I sort of had a crush on him, so that's why I liked him. Not that I thought he was a good actor. I just thought he was kind of, you know, I looked at him. Yeah. He was I saw him in that one with, they were all bad. No, I can't even remember the name anymore. They were bad people and lots of guns, lots of shooting, bank robbery movie, heist.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
But yeah, there's a lot of big names in it. He was way down on the list. There were some big, big celebrities in that, but I can't remember anymore. That's terrible. Getting old. and they're promoting the Joaquin Phoenix, the new Joker. What do you think of that? I'm a musical.
Oh yeah, I saw that it was a musical. I was like,
Are you kidding? Like a musical. Ruining my life.
Lady Gaga is going to be in that, I think.
Oh, yeah, but you know, yeah, okay, so Holly she can Quinn. Sing, but come on. Yeah. It's just wrecking my life.
I feel the same way as you, Al.
I'm going to have to go drink something for a while or something. I don't know. Anyway, well, now we're going to talk about a book that came out, the new book here. It's called Dragged to Hell, and it's not the story of my life. But it could be. And the author's with us. So, Mr. J.P. Jackson, thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. I've been giggling here on the side, you guys. Oh, my goodness.
We, you know, it's Monday. We got to push through this, you know. Got to get up. So, dragged to hell? Was that your move to Edmonton? Like, you moved to Edmonton?
I actually did that willingly. So, I've been a bad gay boy, and I'd never watched any episodes of RuPaul's Drag Race except for the odd. It was on in the background at a friend's house kind of thing, and I thought, I need to watch this. And so I sat down and I binge watched, I think, like 7 seasons.
Wow.
And I know, it was crazy. And then this character sprang to life, and so I had to twist it up. That Drag to Hell was born.
Wow. You know, I never even thought of it that way, you know. I watched some of RuPaul's in the first season or so, and then I sort of lost interest for some reason. I don't know why. It's not really my cup of tea. I mean, I don't dislike it, but I don't look for it. How's that?
I think that's fair. I mean, there's bits and pieces of it that I enjoy and others that I fast forward through. But I always like to, you know, the theme tonight is, you know, and they always have some kind of creative reimagining of something. And just to see what the queens come out with as they strut down the runway, I'm like, wow, that's, sometimes it's a hot mess. Other times it's like, that's just incredible. So, yeah, after watching all that, Azador Necrophilia Hex was born.
I'm sure RuPaul will be very happy to know how that connects her show with necrophilia.
Exactly.
She'll be like, what? Walk away, sachet. No, whatever that is. You know, and I never even thought about Drag to Hell. I was just thinking about myself being dragged to hell every night as I try to go to sleep. What is it with you then? Did you have a bad childhood? Or?
Actually, yes.
Yeah, okay. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about what happened in those rooms at night in the closet.
In the closet, sure. Well, a couple of things, actually. It's funny you should mention that, because when I'm writing, I try really hard not to incorporate too much of my own personal life into my books, because they're works of fiction. There's little tastes and tidbits of things that I've experienced, but the bigger elements, let's say, I tend to leave out because I don't think that should be in there.
Right. But how, that must be really hard, but because those bigger elements are what made you who you are now. So they have to be incorporated in everything you do, even sometimes you don't know it. Cause I always say that about myself. You know, I'll act and do certain things, and it's probably, you know, the good and bad things that have happened to me in my life that put that in my behavior.
I agree 100%. I think it flavors the writing as opposed to directs it. So I'll give an example. I mean, growing up, I was the fabulous little gay child. There was no mistaking where I was going to go in terms of the sexuality spectrum. And of course, kids can be horrible and terrible. And so my childhood was riddled with bullying and torture and abuse and all the rest of it. And not to dwell on that, but instead that ended up in Drag to Hell. The main character's boy name is Nathan. And as he grows up, he is put through those same measures. But then the supernatural world also tends to find him as well. And so his response back to that bullying is perhaps a little more dark and twisted.
Right. So in a sense, your character, your main character is kind of, let's say, dealing or suffering with a lot of the anxiety that you can relate to from your own life. But at the same time, he has powers that in the book that you didn't have in your life.
Sure, we'll go with that.
Well, I mean it in a sense that, you know, when you write a fiction book like this based on some things, you get to have the ending you want, right?
Definitely. Absolutely. And of course, end of this particular story is much more sparkle, glitter, and glam with all the supernatural darkness incorporated into it that I really wish I could pull out of my mad magician's hat on a regular basis. But there's a bit of a ghost story at the beginning of it that is absolutely parallel with my life. And it's the second thing that it was maybe a little too close to home. So when I was growing up, my grandfather passed away I was very small, like 4 years old. Obviously, as a four-year-old, had no real memory or even understanding of what had happened. But this story was told in my family household repeatedly. The day after the funeral, I woke up in the middle of the night, went to my parents' bedroom and woke my father up and said, "Daddy, Daddy, Grandpa's here." Of course, they were visibly upset because they had just buried Grandpa. I'm like, "No, no, no, Grandpa's here. He came to say goodbye." In the story, Dragged to Hell, Nathan has that very similar experience, except it's his Aunt Hildy that comes back to visit him and to warn Nathan's mother of her impending doom. So that made everybody go quiet.
Well, I was, to tell you the truth, I was picturing when it was happening to you and the parents were probably had just watched, you know, one of those scary movies, you know, something like, you know, and they were thinking, oh, you know, it's like Norman Bates or something. You know, you got Grandpa up in the attic in a chair with dressed as a woman in a wig or something and going on. And they were like, oh, my God, what did we do? So the paranormal, this whole spiritual aspect is really important to you.
It is, always has been. It's kind of shaped my life from a very, very young age, and not always in good ways either. In third grade, our teacher for the month of October read us Halloween stories, and that sparked a year-long night terrors episode for me and my entire family. Nobody got any sleep that year. And then, you know, things kind of went quiet. But the minute I hit junior high, 11, 12, that whole realm just kind of got way too interesting. And the first two adult books I actually picked up and read were The Exorcist and Amityville Horror. And then after that, I couldn't possibly get my hands on enough horror books or horror movies and whatnot. My parents just kind of washed their hands of me and went, okay, whatever.
That's when they sent you to Edmonton.
Yeah. Go live with your aunt.
Yeah. What do you find to be a good horror? Like, what is it? Do you just like all horror, or is there particular horrors that stick out for you?
It's funny. I don't watch a whole lot of horror now. I find a lot of the horror that's been created in the last 20 years to be really focused in on the gore aspect of it. And as much as that's still horror, and like it falls into that bucket of cringing and disgusting that makes you turn away because you can't watch it. And that, as much as that is horror for some, for me, it's more the psychological. It's more the build of suspense to the point where you're looking over your shoulder because there was a weird sound and what's coming up to get me. And so I like more the paranormal stuff, the hauntings, the even going into some of the psychological, you know, gaslighting stuff. Is this real? Is it not real? That I'm a big fan of that stuff.
Did you continue to have paranormal experiences throughout your life? And is that what you're drawing on to create these stories?
Or
are 100%. You drawing more from? Oh, you have. Okay.
100%. Fast forward many years. My very first boyfriend was having a sleepover. And in the middle of the night, he woke up and he was like, "Get up, get up, get up." And I'm like, what? "There's a woman in the bedroom." "Oh, yeah. She lives here too. Don't worry about it." I lived in an old turn of the century apartment building in the basement, and I had seen this ghost several times. It was the first time he had ever saw a ghost, and I'm like, "Oh, just go back to bed. It's fine."
Well, at least you had confirmation from somebody else.
Well, this is true. It's like, is Jeff hallucinating again? Or, and then I raised in a fairly religious Lutheran household. And then when I was in high school, I went to a all boys Jesuit priest taught high school. And then some things happened in the organized religion world that we'll maybe not discuss, but it left me rather cold. And of course, being gay, that whole world was not very welcoming and accepting. So I kind of turned away from that. I ended up falling into neo-paganism and Wiccan beliefs, and eventually formed a coven with a few people for many, many years. And so have a pretty good handle on the whole magic bit and whatnot. So yeah, it's kind of flavored and tasted everything throughout my life.
Click your heels three times.
There's no place like home.
Whatever happened to that one, that one boyfriend that was, saw the girl, like he just disappeared, you know?
It's like that tapping out.
Yeah.
No, actually he was okay with it. Freaked out, but okay with it. And honestly, after that, I don't know if I ever saw the ghost again. Maybe what we did that night kind of freaked her out.
It's like one of these pagans doing these nasty witches. Disgusting. Boy, what's the world coming to in my day? But initially, when you're laying on your bed and you're watching RuPaul's Drag Race several times for several seasons over and over, and then you said the character come to you, is that typical for you? And how do you know when you get a character in your mind, what's the process of you deciding, well, I'm going to write a book, I'm going to use this character, or I'm going to go somewhere? And what's that experience?
Some of the queens on the show that really spoke to me were the ones that were the quirky and the odd. There's the glamour queens, there's the camp queens, but the ones that were just maybe a little bubble off center, those are the ones that really kind of stuck with me. And in the back of my head, it's almost like these characters kind of birth themselves into existence based off of some sort of stimuli. And in particular, there was, Azador made herself really well known. And quite frankly, I find the more interesting characters get really loud. And it's like, no, you need to sit down and write this. You need to, and they don't leave you alone. So usually I'll sit down and plot something out, and then I have to dig into the character and start doing some character sheets and all the restaurants. And so I know exactly who this person is.
What stimulant were you using? I want to write this down. I need some help here.
Well, it sounds like you can hear your characters in your head. You have an inner monologue, and that's how you create your characters in your dialogue. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And scenes, too. From every single project I've ever sat down and written, they're like little movies that play out in my head, and I'm just the transcriber watching really bad people behave and do horrible things.
Do you sometimes have a problem deciding which is real life and which isn't? Like,
my friends would tell you yes.
Like, these voices don't tell you to do weird things. You don't have like a shovel by your bed and
I can neither confirm nor deny.
Yeah, and have
we won't tell anyone.
We won't tell anybody. We're not going to but let anybody know.
No shovels, but I do have a plethora of voodoo dolls and some skulls that have not yet absorbed any souls. So
not yet.
Not yet.
Probably all of his old boyfriends.
That's right. You have to have a few receptacles kicking around, right?
So obviously the character came first.
Yes.
And then the story kind of came along, and the setting is sort of, I guess, just there. When you did this, then you probably didn't have a concept of what you want. Like, you weren't trying to tell people anything. There was no subtext or no meaning. It was just a story, and you were getting into the story. But quite often at the end of that, and you're finished it and the book is published, quite often there's a, let's say, more organic, you know, meaning towards the story. Did you find that the book does have something you want people to get out of it?
Believe it or not, yeah. I think this can be said for a couple of my different projects. Be unapologetically who you are. Azador is quirky, gender fluid, goth, terrifying, and yet still lovable and wanted and revered for who she is. And in her own way, comes to find a place where she feels at home. And wouldn't that be nice if we could all find that?
Oh, I gave up.
Evicted.
Oh, well. And so nighttime's when it happens for you. It's what it says on your bio. But then I guess that's the writing. When you get into these, like when you're using characters or when you have ideas in your head, like, you know, shapeshifters, witches and demons and all of these sort of, figures, do you use traditional kind of mainstream ideas of what these characters are, these people, or do you write your own, let's say, rules to the witches or to the shapeshifters and stuff? How does that work for you?
That's a tough one. I've been accused of shaking things up and not always using the canon that's set forth before us. But I like that too. So.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
So, I would say each world that I create, there's going to be elements of those various monsters that everybody is going to be able to relate to. That's what I think brings the beast into some form of recognition. Then people will understand what it is. But then you've got to add, we've all heard the werewolf stories. We've all heard the vampire stories, et cetera, et cetera. So let's twist it up and let's make something new out of it. After I've done that, I might introduce something completely different, something that's not expected within our cultures within, you know, Canada and the U.S. So for instance, I have a character in another series that I'm writing who starts off as human and then eventually ends up as a leshy.
Lesbian?
No, leshy. Oh. No, I can assure you Cam would never end up as a lesbian.
Okay. I wasn't sure what you said there. Thought maybe you... Yeah.
Well, what is a leshy?
That's good. See, I'm glad you asked. A leshy is... So if I were to say to you Wendigo, you probably would have a little bit more of a reference. But this is coming out of Eastern European and Slavic tradition, where it's somewhat of a benevolent creature, but terrifying in its own way. And you know, the villages would say, "Oh, you know, the leshy will get you," in order to keep children in line. Mm-hmm. But occasionally, the leshy will take small children away for snacks. And their appearance is they usually have some kind of like bone structure, like the skull is more apparent and whatnot. Yeah, I've been doing a little bit of reading. I actually had the character in my head, and I knew exactly what it was going to be. And then a friend had posted something on Facebook, and I went, "What the hell is a leshy?" Because I didn't know either. And then when I went and read it, I'm like, "Oh my god, that's exactly what I've been thinking about." So, and of course, I'll have to take that and add my own spins to it. So,
yeah.
Do your readers have a problem, or do readers in general tend to have a problem?
They must have a problem. That was too easy.
You know, would you diverge from the tropes?
I think the small portion of them probably do. I know a lot of readers like the comfortableness of knowing what to expect. But I would say that most readers who are familiar with and enjoy the paranormal or horror or urban fantasy are keen to see new things. Because, you know, like I said, you continually read the same thing over and over and over again. And as much as that's like slipping on a nice, comfortable old pair of slippers, sometimes it's like, wait a minute, you did what? What the hell is this? This isn't a rule I know about. Oh, my God, those things are going to kill me now. Right? You want to add something just a little more. It's a bit of a surprise.
When you're writing these books, you've done a while. Did you always know you were going to be a writer? Was that something that you kind of thought from a little kid?
No. Depending on what point in time you hit me in my growing up, I had a number of different career options ahead of me. I've always been somewhat creative, although don't ask, my day job is IT and healthcare, so that there's nothing creative there. But I've always had to have some kind of artistic outlet. And I've read and read and read for so many years. And of course, you know, I was growing up in the 80s as a teenager, and the AIDS epidemic was happening, and LGBTQ representation in the media and whatnot was just horrifying at best, if it was even there. And over the next 20 years, it you know, took it was almost impossible to find solid books within the fantasy realm, horror realm, whatnot, where LGBTQ representation even existed. So I found myself with a chunk of time where I didn't have a whole lot of stuff to do, and I sat down and I went, I can write a book. By the way, no, I can't. that was an abysmal, it actually did end up being getting published, but not after many, many drafts and some professional editors going at it. But yeah, I remember quite distinctly kind of putting the words "the end" and finally walking up out of the basement where I spent a lot of my free time and looked at my husband and went, I think I just wrote a book. His response was, yeah, of course you did. So
get the dishes done.
Yeah, exactly.
This house is a mess. Get to work. But what was it that actually made you decide to try and publish a book? Like, there's a lot of people that sit around and talk, you know, and they write a lot of things and do all that. But there's a big difference between just writing it and sending it to a publisher or sending it out for people to see, or even self-publishing these days, where everybody and their dog can pick it up and read it, and then they can say nasty things about you online, you know, like if they want. So what was it that jump? Why did you do that?
Self-validation.
Did it work?
No. you know, I wanted to see if the words I had put down were actually decent enough to warrant getting the attention from anybody. And so in my naivete, I really did not have a good understanding of how the publishing world works. Started to do some research on what I needed to do to get that book published. And the thought of doing self-publishing at that point really didn't appeal to me. I wanted to see if the publishing industry would actually sit up, take notice, and go, this is a different voice. This is cool. We want this. And it took a while. I would say it was 2 years of editing with a professional editor, and then lots of rejection, lots of no thank you, I'm not looking for this at this time. And I eventually ended up, you know, for a lark, doing a pitch on Twitter, and completely forgot about it. And it wasn't until my husband and I were on holidays and my phone beeped and I looked at it and I went, oh God, what the hell is this? And it turned out to be Nine Star Press, which is one of my publishers, who liked my pitch, which was an invitation to submit the entire work. And that's how it all started.
The beginning of the end.
The beginning of the end. If somebody had told me way back when, I would have probably gone, oh, this is not worth it.
No, it's different than it's certainly a lot different. So how does each book, when you finish and you accomplish one of these books and put it out, how do you think it changes you? What does it do for you?
That's a really good question. I don't think I've ever been asked that before. What does it do for me? It probably frustrates me to no end that more people don't read it. It becomes a little thorn in my side. I'm proud of the work that I put out. I can always look back on them and go, I love that. I love that phrase I wrote. I love that character. I loved how that scene played out. I get an immense amount of joy when somebody reaches out and says, I read this. Oh my God, I have to read everything that you've ever written now. This is amazing. This is what I've always been looking for. I try not to read this is garbage. Who the hell would ever even think this was readable? I try to steer away from those.
Oh no, you hunt them down and kill them.
Yeah. No, that's what the plethora of voodoo dolls is for.
Well, that's...
if other people are reading my stuff and getting enjoyment out of it, or being able to see themselves in the books, that's exactly why I did it, right? I had a couple of, I would say younger readers. When I say younger, probably late teens. I would not suggest any of my books for anybody who wasn't at least an adult or a very mature teenager. I had a couple of people reach out and just say, thank you. I love all these other books that are mainstream and whatnot that fall into the urban fantasy / horror genre, but I've never seen myself. You included me in that, so thank you. That's what keeps me.
Do you have a favorite character you've written to this date that you still love?
Azador is pretty high on that ranks. I quite like Azador, and I have another character from another series, and I've already made reference to it, the Leshy, Cam. Cam is just an absolute handful. He's a small tank of a guy. He is an absolute furball, and you might not pick him out from a crowd. But the minute he opens his mouth, the sparkles and rainbows falls out, and there's no mistaking who he is. He's irreverent, he's cocky, and yet he is an absolute marshmallow on the inside, and all he really wants is to be cherished and adored.
Sounds like Dave.
With the big balls.
Dave balls. Balls, baseball.
But we've baseball. Got the biggest.
Yeah. Well, he can claim that, but we know this isn't true.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what do you like most about publishing now and writing?
I think the freedom that it gives me. I get to sit down and create really anything I want. It gives me the license to go ahead and have fun without the cops getting involved.
Well, that could be fun too.
Well, it's true, depending on the cop and how he shows up. I like getting lost in my worlds, and occasionally I'll get the knock on the spare room door from my husband going, going to be in here much longer, and it's like, oh, how long have I been in here? All night. Oh. So I kind of get immersed in my own little worlds, and I enjoy that. That's fun for me.
What do you dislike?
What do I dislike? Oh, there's so many things that the publishing world is just, it's so frustrating. The marketing piece. I wish I could just toss my book out into the world and have people gobble it up. And not every story is for everybody, so I am totally okay with this book was garbage. I don't care. That's fine. You know what? You still picked it up. You still put in enough energy to put a review up on Amazon or Goodreads or wherever. Marketing and just trying to be seen, it's so tough. And honestly, there are so many really, really good stories out there. But there's also a whole bunch of really bad ones too. So it's finding, I don't know. I haven't found that magic formula yet where you can put something out into the world and then people just gobble it up and, reach out saying, God, I love this. Please do more.
Well, how do you keep track of continuity in your series books or in your worlds, as you call them? Do you have tools, techniques? How does that work?
I have spreadsheets. I have notebooks. I keep track of character histories, and I have like a repository of photos, and I start organizing them. Writing is not just a simple exercise of sitting down and putting out a story, or trying to pump out a story. It's understanding the characters, where they came from, what their backstory. And when I say what the character is, I don't mean they were 6'2", blue-eyed and full of muscles. I mean, where did they grow up? What was their childhood like? What is their biggest pet peeve? One of my characters has he twitches. Whenever he gets really, really nervous, he starts to twitch. Like, keeping track of those things throughout a series or even the story gives that character life and texture. They're not one dimensional, but it, yeah, like keeping track. And then I have a whole, I'm very fortunate. I've got a really good group of other authors who, you know, hey, send me your stuff when you're done. I'll alpha read it for you. And they go through and went, dude, you know, you did this wrong. What's the poem? Roses are red. Violets are his eyes were blue, but on page 52 you said they were. Oh, his eyes are hazel, but on page 52 you said they were blue. Like those kinds of inconsistencies and whatnot. You have to keep track of all of it. But occasionally throwing in a little red herring that doesn't get addressed, that can be fun too.
So you have plenty of tools.
I think you have to. If you're gonna create really good stories, you have to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So now, do you like to interact with readers and people and stuff like that? And if you do, do you have social media set up where readers can follow you or friend you? Or do you have a website? Where do people find you?
Oh, everywhere, unfortunately. That's the other thing I don't like, but I do like. I am on Facebook. I am on Twitter. I am on Instagram. I really hate to admit it, but I'm on TikTok too. Not very often. I'm on Goodreads. I have an Amazon profile. I do have a blog. I'm everywhere. And the social media can suck up a good portion of my designated writing time, and I try not to do it. Although, I love it when readers reach out and go, I love this, thank you, or please don't ever do that again, or you're a horrible person, how could you do that to your characters? Like, I love that. Just the fact that somebody took the time and energy and effort to actually reach out and say anything is, I think, quite heartwarming.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have a website too, or?
I have a WordPress blog that's right now the website. The other thing they don't tell you when you go into this is how expensive all of this can be.
Well, yeah.
I didn't really set out to try and make a whole lot of money, but you know, recover costs would be nice. So
yeah.
The blog is a free platform.
Well, we'll have all that up as well and stuff to help let people know where you are and stuff. And a Grindr or
I think my husband might frown on that one, but
yeah. Okay, so what's your handle on Grindr so people can find? How was writing over the pandemic part for you?
Difficult. You would have thought that being sequestered behind four walls would have been a really good catalyst for let's utilize this additional time, but I'm going to say I'm not your typical writer in that I really enjoy interactions with people. I'm much more of an extrovert than I am an introvert. And so the 2.5 years where you're forced to be away from other people actually did me more harm from a mental health perspective than somebody who enjoys maybe not being around people. Even my work, I work in healthcare, forced us to work from home. So it was a tough 2 years. And I think a lot of people found it tough for many different reasons. And I don't think we've kind of seen all the fallout yet.
Well, you can write about it now.
You know what? To be honest with you, if I see one more plague book, I'm just can't do it.
Yeah.
Can't do it, kids.
Yeah. Something about that, eh? It just doesn't work.
And it's too close to home. It's too soon.
Yeah.
Give it a few years.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of it, but a lot of movies or shows like, you know, series on it and end of the world sort of stuff. It's always been around. I guess it always will be. I don't know. Until it is the end. Well, this has been a real pleasure. It's been a delight. And we've been talking about all your writing, but your latest book is called Dragged to Hell. And our guest is the author of that book, J.P. Jackson. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks, J.P.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or show, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.